Date by Arthur S. Hawk Sr., February 3rd, 1976.
Here we are at the old steamboat wharf. The building to the right is the warehouse and grain storage. The building to the left is the home of the wharfmaster, Mr. Folk. The boat tied up to the wharf is the Corsica, which makes two trips a week from Baltimore to Crumpton, stopping at many of the wharves between here and the bay. We will continue walking up the causeway towards town. We are now at the corner of Front and Broad Street. The old remains of that old building to the right was once known as the Cruiser House. The Cruiser House was last occupied by Mr. Ben Hartley. Continuing up Broad Street, we come to this large three-story building, which is the old Crumpton Hotel. Over the years, it has had many owners and has been a very successful operation. The porches are the most pleasant place to sit in the summer and look out across the water. After leaving the hotel, we will continue up Broad Street. But I must tell you who lives in the different buildings. The hotel is now occupied by Mr. and Mrs. Perry Lynch and their daughter, Neva. A portion of the house is occupied by Mr. and Mrs. Ralph Cannon, who are merchants. The next house on our right is the home of Miss Gertie Lynch. Then we come to the home of Mr. Bert Shepherd and his wife, Mary. Mary Shepherd is quite a poet and very active in state politics. The next house is the corner house cornering on 4th Street and Broad. It's the residence of Dr. Stack. In addition to being a medical doctor, Dr. Stack is also a magistrate and takes care of a great deal of legal business for people in the town. Crossing the street, we come to a three-story building. This building has quite a historical background. During the Civil War, it was known to have one of the largest stocks of merchandise of any establishment in the county. It was the property and operated by the Harrison brothers. It is now operated by Mr. and Mrs. Ralph Cannon. But continuing up the street, the next house is the Goodhen House. Mrs. Goodhen and her son live here while Mr. Goodhen is on the road as a farm equipment salesman. The next house is the home of Mr. Tice Lee and his wife. Mr. Lee has one son and one daughter. Foster is the son and Ruth is the daughter. The next house is the Milburns. The Milburns are truck farmers. The next house we come to is that of the Dohertys. Mr. Doherty operates a small store in a portion of his residence. Now we are in front of the home of Mr. Clay Henrich. Mr. Clay Henrich is quite an elderly gentleman, and Mr. Clay Henrich has held some important posts in county government. We are now coming at the end of that block. We are standing in front of the millinery shop of Miss Eva Armstrong. Crossing this street, we will come to the house of Mr. Spencer Merrick. Mr. Spencer Merrick is a very successful banker and farmer. We're continuing up Broad Street to the corner of 4th and Broad. We come to the home of Mr. Cooper Tarbutt. The next house is that of Mr. Nate Coleman and his son Spencer. A little further up the block, we come to the home of Captain Gilbert Brown. Captain Gilbert Brown, a retired sea captain. The next house is that of Mr. Will Stevens. Mr. Will Stevens operates a florist establishment and grows early plants for the surrounding territory. Now we're coming to the home of Mr. Abel Biddle. Mr. Biddle is also a truck farmer. little stretch to go, and we were in front of the Crumpton School. Crumpton School was, when I first knew it, its principal was Miss Edith Harrison. Now there's quite a stretch between here and the road, the crossroads. We speak of it as the fingerboard. Turning right here, you can go to Chestertown. Turning left, you can go east to Millington. We've crossed the road now to Crumpton Cemetery. Crumpton Cemetery is beautifully cared for. Crumpton Cemetery was at one time moved from a spot about a half mile west of here. We will return to Crumpton now on the east side of Broad Street after leaving the cemetery. The large house and farm on the right are the property of Mr. and Mrs. Bob, Will Bobs. We'll stroll on down a distance of about a quarter of a mile. We come to the Jarman home. The Jarmans operate a small dairy and supply a great deal of milk to the residents of Crumpton. The next home is that of Mrs. Wallace. Mrs. Wallace, as I've understood, was the mother of Mr. George I. Harrison. Now we're coming to the home of George I. Harrison and his daughter Edith and Anna. He has a son, Roland, but Roland at this time is away working. Now we come to Mr. Pete Cresswell's home. Pete Cresswell is a waterman, fisherman, boat builder. The house with the surrounding porch is that of Mr. David Clemens. Mr. David Clemens operates a hardware store. The next house is that of Mr. Arthur Story and his wife Carrie and son Avery. Mr. Story is a retired police officer from the city of Baltimore. Now we're coming to the home of Mr. Butler. Mr. Butler is a wagon builder, and that is his shop that we pass after passing his residence. Now we are standing in front of what was at one time the old carriage factory, built in 1859 by Morris Welch. And the carriages were built here for a long time, and it has been used for many other things during years. It is now the hardware store of Mr. Will Bradley. This next house we come to is that of Mrs. Elmer Spry. Mrs. Elmer Spry is a widow lady who moved here from Kent County when her husband retired from farming. Now we are in the home of Mr. Will Sparks. Mr. Will Sparks is an undertaker. We're coming to the corner of Mechanic Street now. This house on the corner is that of Mr. Jim Bowers. Mr. Jim Bowers is a carpenter. The building on the corner with the storefront was once the drugstore of Dr. Wallace. Dr. Wallace has passed away, and his sister Katie is operating the store at this time. The next is a double house. The first one is the home of Miss Katie Wallace. I would like to tell you more about the Wallaces because it is an interesting background that I failed to get more information on. Miss Wallace, the Wallace was spelled W-A-L-L-I-S, and it is understood that the early Wallaces came here in association with the Cominges family. I'm sorry, I don't know more about it because to me it sounds very interesting. Now the next house is a home of Miss Bidding, a maiden lady living sharing a half of that double house. The next house is the studio of Colonel South. Colonel South is a veteran of the Civil War, but has become the recognized photographer in this area. He had a studio on the second floor of this house. Continuing on down the street, this is the home of Mr. Clark, George Clark. He did some shoe repairing, and also had a candy store and a few items in the grocery line. The next was known then as the Bradley Building. It was not long after I came that a fire took place in this building and damaged it to quite some extent. The next building on the right was a hardware store operated by Mr. David Clemens. The next home was that of Harry Harley. his mother, known as Ma Hartley, also his brother, Poe Hartley, living there, and his daughter, Betsy, was away from school. The cottage to the rear is spoken of as the Rose Cottage. I do not remember who was occupying it at that time. The next house was the house of Mr. Ed Walls. Mr. Ed Walls had an ice cream store in there for a while. Coming on down the street, there was a building in the lot between that and the grocery store. That building had been used for practically every line of business that was known. Now we come to the grocery store. The grocery store at that time was operated by Mr. Hackett Emerson. Mr. Hackett Emerson was there during the early 20s. The next building was a little shop known as Sam Clue's. Sam Clue's at one time served some food. Among them was a turtle stew that he made. I've heard it said that when he heard a carriage coming across the bridge, he would add so much more water to the stew. Now the next house on that side was the home of Barbara Burrs. Barbara Burrs and his wife living there, but he operated a barbershop to the rear of the Harrison's, what was once the Harrison store, now the store of Ralph and Cannon. The next large house was the home of Mr. John Harrison. Mr. John Harrison and his wife and her father. Her father was known as Mr. Perry Roof. He was a retired gentleman from Baltimore. Going on down the hill, we come to the blacksmith shop, which at this time was the property of Mr. Bob Godwin. Mr. Bob Godwin had quite a bit of machinery there, and at that time they had a track where they could take the boats in the water, and they were worked on. We were now at the foot of the hill, and we will go out First Street. The first house on the right going out First Street was the home of Mr. and Mrs. Hicks Travis. With him lived his daughter, Mrs. Hodson, who had two children. The next house on was the house of one of the Walters, just for a short period, but he became the home of Mr. and Mrs. Lloyd Gale. They're moving over there from Galena. The next house on the right was that of Mr. Stump Walls and his son Aldie, his daughter Neva, and his daughter Susie. On the left side of the road, we'll cover them as we go along, was the home of Mr. Farmer Williams. Mr. Farmer Williams was the father of Mrs. Willard Biddle. The next house was a home of, on the left was a home of Mr. Charlie Nickerson. Mr. Charlie Nickerson at that time was operating a mill. He also operated a thrashing rig with the help of his son Leslie. His housekeeper was Mrs. Woodle. Mr. Nickerson's wife had passed away. Now we come to the corner of Caroline and First Street. This house on the corner is the home of the Anthony. Mrs. Anthony lived there while her son, Jake, was away as an engineer aboard a merchant marine ship. We continue up on the left side of the street. We pass a house in the middle of the block known as the Fenimore home. It had very beautiful old gardens. It was these gardens that Mrs. Mary Fenimore Shepherd wrote the poem in a monastery garden. Miss Sally Fenimore lived there, the first that I remember. And she was the mother of Mary Shepherd, Hattie Rubesamen, Garrett Fenimore. She had lost one son, Woodle, during the flu epidemic in 1918. Let's cross the street now to the right side. In that house lived Mr. Will Hudson. Mr. Will Hudson was married to Mrs. Susie Walsh. Following the Hudson house is a house where Mr. Willard Biddle and his wife, Leona, lived. Further up on that side, we come to the corner house, which was known as the home of Mr. and Mrs. Boss Lloyd. Their livelihood was made mostly by picking huckleberries and selling them. To the right, down that street, Mr. John Fenimore. Mr. John Fenimore raised quite a bit of poultry. On the opposite side, known as the Cherokee Cottage, was the home of Mr. Henry Coleman. Mr. Henry Coleman, daughter, Susie, and her husband, Palmer Hemmons, lived in that house. Continuing on down that block, on the right was the home of Jerry Godwin. Jerry Godwin was of the old family who operated Godwin's Mill, but he retired to Crumpton and trained bird dogs for wealthy people. Had a great collection of Indian relics. Now we come to a house known as the Charlie Wiggins House. Charlie Wiggins was quite a character. A drink or two and he had his derby on. And when he had his derby on and a drink or two, he had his mouth organ. And he could compose the greatest songs you've ever seen. He took care of an old lady whose name was Carrie. I remember him singing a song called On the Banks of the Chester River, where me and me Carrie dwell. We have many good times together, and sometimes we relate. Now we are about named all the houses on that street. We're coming towards Market Street. We're now at a quarter of Market Street and First Street. Looking down the hill, there is a fishing shack down there belonging to Mr. Johnny Stutz. Mr. Johnny Stutz is quite a fisherman. He drags a seine. There are very few people left doing that. Mr. Johnny Stutz often supplied fish for many of the farmers around. I've seen as many as 6 and 7 carriages tied at the top of the hill while the farmers were standing at the foot of the hill with a basket in their hand waiting for Mr. Stutz to come in with his catch. We come up, turn left from Market Street and front. This house, Mr. Bob Fenimore rented from a man named Bishop. Mr. Bob Fenimore was a blacksmith at that time. He had a wife, Helen, and 3 daughters. He later moved to Wilmington and I lost track of him. We come to 2nd and Market Street, and a very nice house on the corner was that of Mr. Johnny Stutz. Mr. Johnny Stutz was a good mechanic and kept his home in a beautiful condition. We'll turn left down 2nd Street now. There is an old building in a cluster of trees on the left in that block between Market and Merchant. At this time, it had hay stored in it, so it was gone beyond the point of habitation. Continuing on down that block, to the right is the block, the first block of lots I bought between 1st and 2nd Pine and Merchant. And the next block, between Pine and Caroline, on the left was a double house. It was occupied by the newest people during the first years I was in Crumpton. But Mr. Clough, the father of Mrs. Stutz, lived there, the most vivid in my memory, he and his wife. Now we come to the next block between Caroline and Broad. On the left corner is the Wint Princefield home. They had not lived there long as they had moved from Kent County. On the right-hand side of that block was the Parsons, belonging to the M.P. Church. The M.P. Church was an attractive old church with the most beautiful colored windows I ever seen. Next was the home of Mrs. Register. Mrs. Carrie Register was the widow of a retired Kent County farmer. She and her son George lived there. The next was the home of the Rylands. That was Mr. Jesse Ryland and his uncle and his wife. And Mr. Jesse's sister lived there. Now we come to a double house. On the right, that double house, I just can't remember who were the occupants at the time. But one time later, Mr. Dutch Walls lived there. Well, the next home on the right was a three-story building, quite a large, roomy place. Mr. James Walls lived there in my early times in Crumpton. Mr. Jim Walls also owned a farm out towards Millington. Now we are back at Barbara Burgess' barber shop in the rear of the Ralph Cannon store. So we will make a loop up Broad Street to 3rd. Turning at 3rd Street, we'll walk down, and in the center of the block, between Broad and Caroline, is the Methodist Episcopal Church and Parsonage. And the next house between that Parsonage and Caroline Street is the home of Captain Tom Ware. Captain Tom Ware was a man of a most interesting background. He knew much about the early days of Crumpton. I wish I had talked to him more. So that about finishes. There were no further houses on 3rd Street between that and Market. So we'll go back up to 4th Street, turning right. Going out 4th Street, the first house on the left was the house of Mr. Harry Robinson and his wife Nellie. Later it became the Cora Reed property. Continuing on down that road, we come to the Harris house, where Earl and his brother Paul lived. They did some farming. Always raised some nice hogs and a lot of chicken. There was a house next to it known as the State's House. It was not long after that the State's House was tore down. The States had a daughter, Eva, and a son, Jimmy. They moved to New York. From there on out, 4th Street, until we took a turn, strike a turn in the road called Pine Tree Road. There were two lots there that are occupied by a man named Frank Walker. Frank Walker lived in one shack, half under the ground, just a board overhead. That is as far as Crumpton went at that time. Let's take a stroll down Market Street towards the river again. On the left is the Bowers home. The Bowers is a family of folks who bought this land as a summer place. They were carriage builders and had been very successful. He also bought a vast acreage on the other side of Pearl Creek, and which he put in quite an orchard of fruits that had never been known in this neighborhood. It one time had piling driven in the Pearl Creek in hopes of building a bridge from his point on Pearl Creek into the town of Crumpton, but it was never completed. Pearl Creek is the creek that Mary Shenwell wrote this little legend of her poem from. Captain Tom Ware was an elderly gentleman when I came to Crumpton. So a man with a lot of interest. The information he gave me regarding the crossing of the Chester River at Crumpton, as he had heard it, not as he had seen it, but it started far back, and the raft with which they crossed was constructed of logs surfaced with planks. The planks had been cut by the old form up and down saw, of which there were two in the locality of Crumpton. To get to the ferry, there was a small portion of marsh which had to be crossed by a corduroy road. The barge
was operated by Mr. Callister. There was a question as to whether it was Callister or McAllister. Anyway, he came here through the influence of some of the descendants of the Comegys family. Let's go down the river now to the island. It's a small island lying at a point off Pearl Creek, a little closer to the Kent shore. Mr. Coleman told me that at one time this island had a tillable land to the amount of 14 acres. There was also a house on it. The farm was mostly tilled by the Kent County farmers because they could drive across at low tide and carry their teams and equipment. Mr. Coleman said that as a boy he remembers the largest tobacco he ever seen in his life grown on that island. And they oftentimes had bumper crops of corn. Now let's continue up the main street of Crumpton till we come to the fingerboard. And we will turn left a matter of a half a mile. We come to the property which was formerly known as Godwin property. Now, the last few years, been called the Bourne place. The old mill on the left at the water's edge was a grist mill. This grist mill was operated by a race known as, coming from what is known as Red Lion Branch. The water was flushed under a road through a sluice to the mill. The pressure from that water operated the mechanism. I have talked to Mr. Bob Godwin. Mr. Bob Godwin is a descendant of the folks that owned it many years back. Mr. Bob said there was also connected to that mill, just a few feet north of it, was a sawmill. The mill lays on a little strip of water called Mill Creek. Mill Creek comes out back of Crumpton and was a place where many mussels were found. At a certain period, at the beginning of the century, the local people opened those mussels for pearls. I was at one time shown a pint jar half full of small pearls. It was then in the possession of Mr. Poe Hartley. They said that Tiffany and Company bought most of the pearls. They were small, but occasionally there was a larger one which was for a fairly good price. Let's come down the shore from Mill Creek to the principal part of Crumpton again. At the foot of what is known as Mechanic Street, there was an ice house where the ice was stored winter to be used and was often still available at the last of June and the 1st of July. Coming on from the where the ice house had been, we will walk up Mechanic Street to Broad Street. The site to the left, it is said that at one time there was a foundry here. Several of the oldest houses in Crumpton were lived in by those folks connected to this foundry. Now we are out to Broad Street again. The area laying to the left of Mechanic Street as we come approach Broad Street was excellent truck land and was tilled when I was there by Mr. Dahl Coleman. We have found many, many arrowheads here. Each year after the plowing is done and a few rains have fallen, one could most always pick up a few arrowheads, which were of great interest to the people. It must have been great hunting country for the Indians, because the same thing seems to have been the case all the way down the shore on the south side of the river. I do not much about the west north side. We're going down Broad Street now to First Street. We will turn left to First Street, continuing out towards Market Street, but the first block out where Caroline crosses Front Street is a white building was known as the Creamery. I can remember being told by Mr. Uly Smith, who was raised down the river, that as a boy, he rowed a boat from the other side of Hur Creek up to the shore below the Creamery and carried the cans of milk to the Creamery to have butter made from it. But in place of carrying home empty cans, they filled it with buttermilk for the pigs, which were at the farm. And he would row it on back down the river below, to his residence below Pearl Creek. We would continue out Front Street now, crossing Pine, and approaching Merchant Street. Mr. Jerry Godden lives between Front Street and the river at a point near Merchant Street. Mr. Jerry Godden and his family had what was called drag seine, and it was on their shore that they would haul the catch of the local fishermen, because at the top of the hill there would be a row of fish peddlers, some of them sleeping all night, waiting for the catch. One man in particular, Mr. Will Spence, told me that as a young man, he drove from Dover to Crumpton, slept under a tree that he pointed out, waiting for a load of catfish for the following morning. The catfish would come in and he would sit in the back of the wagon with a lantern, and between Crumpton and Dover, he would skin catfish and would stand on the curb in Dover the following day and sell Crumpton catfish to the passing public. We will continue out Front Street now, stopping at the top of the hill at Market Street. Look down to Mr. Johnny Stutz's fishing shore. I mentioned this before, that this is where the folks tied their horses and wagons while they went to the shore to get a basket full of fish from Mr. Stutz. Let's walk Market Street and wander on along Piney Shore. It is a beautiful spot. It goes right along Chester River for a matter of 1,000 to 1,200 feet. Then the shore turns up Pearl Creek. We can stand here at the ridge now, looking across Pearl Creek. We can still see some of the piling that were left from the effort of Mr. Bowers to build a bridge across, which never materialized. The cottage across Pearl Creek still stands, but in a very dilapidated condition. We will continue up Pearl Creek until we come to a parcel of land known as the Holiday Lot. It was later owned by worked by Thomas Jefferson, a local produce farmer and peach orchard operator. And we are back out now on Pine Tree Road. Turning to our right, we will continue out until we come to the Chestertown-Millington Road. We will stop here and look to our right. We will see quite a hill. That hill is called Holden's Hill. The stream of water which flows under the bridge there is the head of Pearl Creek. I think it would be a good thing now if we would reverse our walk and return to Crumpton while I tell you about some of the things down Pine Tree Road. This small house to the right here, when I first came to Crumpton, was occupied by a colored man. I do remember one thing about him. He always kept a good-looking team, drove a good-looking horse to a brake cart, but had to have a derby. Continuing on down Pine Tree Road, I will tell you about the strip of woods to my right. In the center of this woods is a large peat bog. I have been told that many years ago, during a drought, this peat moss bog caught fire and burned for months and months and months. Now we will walk on back toward town, passing the lot I mentioned a while ago known as the holiday lot. At this time it was tilled by Mr. Jefferson. Mr. Jefferson had a brother-in-law who lived with him and helped him. John, he was called. He was an immense man. And it was no trouble for him to grab the cultivator and walk quite a distance to clean up a part of the garden. And I had seen him do it. Now we're coming to the corner of Market Street and Pine Tree Road. The old top of the shack you see to your right was the last place that Frank Walker dwelled. Now to the left, down about 100 yards, you will find the ruins, the remains of an old shed. That was to it one time, Frank Walker's dwelling. We'll continue on through this one-horse road, the wagon track wise, which was made as a shortcut into Crumpton, when farmers were coming from the Jesstown Road to go over into camp. We'll continue up 4th Street, and on our left is a walk yard belonging to Mr. Elwood Coleman. The next place on the left and the right is the truck patch of Mr. Clay Hendricks. If you'll notice off to the right, there is a plum tree. Those are the finest plums I think I ever ate. We will cross this ditch between here and Broad Street. This ditch dries up in the hot summer. Most always, there can be some water reached if you dig down a few feet. Well, we are back to the corner of 4th and Broad Street. Let's walk across to the Bradley store. We'll sit on the curb there. I see Mr. Abe Crew there, and Mr. Biddle. Mr. Bradley still sits in his chair on the porch of the hardware store. I'm going to try to tell you some of the interesting tales that I haven't come to. The large store, two blocks down on the left, which was one time the Harrison Brothers store, now occupied by Ralph Cannon, is a great gathering place in the evening, particularly in the fall when the hunting season starts. There's a lot of city people come down here and stay for the first few days of the season. We have a character in town, Mr. Lambert Ware. I spoke of his parents in the early part of this tape. But Mr. Ware could sit on that counter starting at 6 o'clock in the evening and continually tell interesting tales, some of them quite tall. There was one gentleman, Naccarelli, from Marcus Hook, who always bought a box of cigars from the cigar case, and throughout the evening was so entertained that he had to treat everybody to cigars. But Lambert Ware was really a tall tale salesman. I remember one of his tales was of a dog he had named Rose, a retriever. He told of a day that he and Elwood Coleman went hunting. There were 7 ducks in the group. Rose was heavy with pup. They shot into them and every duck vanished. But Rose made a dive for the water. As Rose came up, he looked back at her and here were six puppies, each with a duck in its mouth. She had made a complete catch. He also said that he could throw his keys over in 20 foot of water and that dog would go to the bottom and bring it back to him. A great tale of his was about a cow his mother and dad had named Cherry. Cherry was so heavy with milk, when she came fresh, broke both hind legs to carry it. And to tell tales about his garden, one of them was a rapid-growing watermelon vine. He said Dr. Stack's car broke down, so as Dr. Stack came to the house, they turned the head end of that vine out into the road. Dr. Stack straddled it and went out in the country and made his call. But that was not all of it. They had a pumpkin vine in that same garden that grew so large that they cut it in half. They made a two-car garage out of one half of it. The other half they took to the river, put it overboard, and shipped tomatoes to Baltimore. Well, that type of a story Mr. Ware could tell all night long. I want to get something on this tape regarding the Clemens family. The Clemens family, principal holdings were in Kent County, beautiful farms, beautiful stock. But they also had a great pride and made great effort for Crumpton. Each being storekeepers here, the Clemens, I understand, were instrumental in getting our first rural route into Crumpton. They were also instrumental in the streetlight, because back before the turn of the century and at the turn of the century, the trees had staked into them an iron rod with a loop in the end and a wooden peg on it, upon which was set an oil lamp. Those lamps were lighted in the evening, so Crumpton was not too far back. It had streetlights long before many other towns. It was quite a picture to look down Main Street and see a great number of carriages, wagons, and there's horses with saddles tied to the hitching posts. The hitching posts started right below Eve Armstrong, in front of Mr. Darty's, and they were also in front of Mr. Clark's. On down to the corner, there was a Hackett Emerson store on the right, and in front of the Cannon store on the left, and they turned around the street, and on Second Street, their hitching post is back as far as Barbara Burge's barbershop. Across the street from barbershop was a red building, which was Bob Fenimore's blacksmith shop. He was a very busy man when he got there, but he would never get there before mid-morning or noon. He was really asleep, but he was a good fellow. Let's continue out Second Street to Pine. Now to our left is a block of land. It's the first block I bought, and second to third to Pine to Merchant. It contained 40 lots. Well, I bought a building that was down the road a piece from Mr. Enoch Clow. I had the boys move it out, and we made a very comfortable room in one half of it. It was there that I lived for a long time, had many a good time together. I can remember Pierce Bowers. He was quite a good cook. One year, in those days, crows flew over Crumpton towards the Kent side of the river by the thousands in the evening. I can remember shells were cheap at that time. We stood at the door of that cabin and we shot crows until we had what looked like a half a bushel of them. Well, we picked out what we thought were the young crows. We did not bother to pick them, but we skinned them and cut from them just the breast. Pierce parboiled those breasts. Later, he fried them as you would pasteurize a rabbit, and I'm going to tell you they were good eating. In order time, we'd slip over to Fred Stevenson, get some milk because he always had a surplus. We would make homemade ice cream. And boy, could Pierce Bowers make homemade ice cream. Another thing that I enjoyed back in those days was the church suppers they had. And I always fared well, because calling the church supper, they sold what was left at auction. And I was always fortunate enough to get some awful good eating and live very well for several days after the church supper. The folks living in Crumpton, a great many of them, kept a flock of laying hens. You would find that practically all of them had a garden somewhere around. Another interesting thing was that in the fall of the year, the first cold spells arrived, there were plans for a hog killing, because you would find a pair of hogs or more at about every other residence. The hog killing was quite an affair. It was, the men practicing that line of work would arrive in Crumpton before daylight with their equipment, their tanks and their wood and the necessary tools. I have seen as much as 25 and 30 hogs on the gallows, and that would continue on for maybe 2 or 3 days later in the winter. Fox hunting was a sport practiced in Crumpton to a great extent in the early years of my living here. Many of the residents kept a pair or wore foxhounds. As I remember it, the fox hunters would
perhaps twice a year, have what they call a bag box, and they would release it somewhere on the outskirts of the town, and the hunters would have a day of pleasure.
During the harvesting, I worked on the farms. I helped to shock wheat on every one of the Clemens farms. In the spring, I worked in the asparagus patch of Mr. Bob Wormsley, walking across the bridge and across the fields to what was known as the Brooks Farm. Mr. Ticely and I would go together. We would get our breakfast as soon as we arrived at the Wormsley home, go to the field, cut asparagus, help to tie it, and at the end of the morning we were paid 50 cents. But we went back to the house and got one of the best meals I'll ever remember. But in addition to that 50 cents, Mr. Wormsley would let Tice and I each have a basket of the cove to spin the one, and we let us tie them and bring them home. And from that, we always got quite a little bit of change, sometimes as much as $2 out of what he gave us. So the day's work wasn't too bad after all. Now we're back in Compton. Let's go across that beautiful causeway, the White Shell Road and the Arch of the Willows, down to the shell-covered wharf. The Corsica ties up here when it's coming up from Baltimore, unloads its freight. The teams from the outlying territories, such as Sutterfield, Barkley, and Millington, come to Crumpton to pick up their freight. Some of the willows are getting old and falling apart. The house to the left is now occupied by Grace and George Woodall. George is a mechanic for the cannery across the bridge. The cannery now has been enlarged from a single peach cannery to a large combination cannery of beans and tomatoes. It's operated by D.E. Foote & Company in Baltimore, and later owned by Colonel Phillips. As we come off the bridge, the large building to the right, which was last occupied by Harry Robinson's father, and Harry Robinson and his wife Nellie. This was at one time known as Slaughter Hotel. The Slaughter Hotel took care of a great many drummers going through the country, and also took care of the people from the boats that were hauling freight and grain to and from Crumpton. Now above us here, I told you earlier in the tape, I believe, was a boatyard. Now some of the men who worked at the boatyard lived here. They also were three houses, most west of us. One next house to the Florida Hotel was last occupied, as I remember then, while the hotel stood, was with Elwood Coleman. Now there were two other houses up the hill. One had been the Princefield house. The Princefield had now moved over into Crumpton. The next house was the Lloyd. Mr. Lloyd had returned here from being up the city. Of course, Crumpton Lane is quite a nice road. Up on the left you'll find some black heart cherries that are out of this world. And the Crumpton is always kept a little wider than the average country road. I was told it was due to the fact that it gave the Clemenses a place to show their fine horses.